Sometimes in life, others will push you into a corner and challenge your capabilities, vision, and goals. In the case of Macho 1929, his true confidence and belief within himself led to an outcome that would pave out the rest of his life.
And I remember, and I had never really told the story, but you go for portfolio reviews. So I went in and I'm showing most of my comic book stuff. So once again, these guys turn around and they're like, well, you know, this is really illustration. This isn't fine, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, well, you know, why do you think you should be here? And once again, it was that, fuck you, you know? So I was like, because this isn't all I can do. And if I'm not here, you guys are missing out. You know, I'm super arrogant. I was a super dick. But that is what, I guess they saw that kind of drive and they accepted me, I got in.
Also on this week's episode, we discuss carving out your path, sacrificing for your passion, and staying outside of the box. And now, episode 23 of Culturation.
Good evening, my fellow citizens.
Are you ready? The main event of the evening.
The ideas.
It's the word that you put in.
The ability.
Can you dig it?
The talent.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
Those who influence, the entertainer, the business leader, and the entrepreneur, they're all right here on Culturation. And now, your host, Justin Epstein.
Welcome to Culturation. I'm your host, Justin Epstein. On this week's episode, we speak with the awe-inspiring artist, Macho 1929. Originally from South Bronx, Macho 1929's practice expands to London, Milan, Los Angeles, and Seoul. Being deeply influenced by global aesthetics and the urban artwork that surrounds his daily life, Macho 1929's practice continues to evolve yet stays true to challenging contemporary societal notions. His work has been featured in various solo and group exhibitions all over the United States and the world, such as the Perez Art Museum in Miami or Gallery Ann in Seoul, Korea. Today, his artwork can be found in the multiple private, city, and corporate collections, from Google to the French Consulate of the U.S., and from Paramount and Universal Pictures to the public art collections of cities like Glendale, Los Angeles, and West Hollywood. Most recently, Macho 1929's work was acquired for the Perman Collection of the Figg Museum of Art, and he was included in the Juried BP Portrait Awards for the National Portrait Gallery in the United Kingdom. He currently lives and works out of Los Angeles. And with that being said, I'd like to welcome street and contemporary artist, Macho 1929, to the podcast. Thanks for coming in today, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All the way from LA. You're the second person this week I've had from LA, but from New York.
Yeah.
So for those that may not be familiar with you or your work or kind of a little bit of background, can you tell them a little about who you are, kind of what you do?
Yeah, you said I'm from New York. I came out to LA in like 2001. I kept doing my work out in LA from New York, and I kind of relocated to the West Coast, but I go back and forth a bunch. But it's a weird journey, a weird mix, because I do street art, and back in LA I was doing, before it got super popular, I was doing illegal stuff out there. But I have the gallery route, I have the street art route, and my whole reasoning for doing street art was I grew up in the South Bronx, and this is crack era South Bronx, and I used to walk up to the bodega every day with the original Macho, which was my grandfather. And I would see, you know, it was all abandoned buildings, and I would see huge burners, huge pieces around. And I gravitated to that because being in the South Bronx and that environment, you know, chances of going to a gallery, you don't really have that opportunity. That's not something my grandfather, who was, you know, hard worker and all that, but it wasn't really his priority to bring me to galleries and things like that. So I was exposed to art outside. And for me in LA, when I was, you know, getting into doing stuff and, you know, doing pieces, I wanted that same kind of thing, where people can experience art in a completely public space, you know, and it takes away financial constraints, it takes away class, everything, where everyone can enjoy it, everyone can see it, or everyone can hate it. It's, you know, because art is subjective, so.
And at what age was it that you started seeing these things with your grandfather? Were you, what, 5, 10? Like, when did you start really kind of resonating with art?
I mean, I still got scoliosis. I used to draw on the kitchen table. but it slowly it started making sense to me right around, like, 10, 11. Right around there, I slowly, you know, you as a kid, you start putting things together. And you start saying that's, you know, like, apart from being a little kid and I want to be a cowboy, I want to be an astronaut, you start looking at it and saying, I could see myself doing that. I can see myself, you know, being fulfilled, like, enjoying that, you know, as a passion.
I'm always envious of people when I speak to them, and at that young of an age, you already start to kind of look at something and know, this is what I want to do with my life. Very few people, I feel like, ever kind of get that feeling, or maybe they get it and they just don't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
You know, because coming from, like you said, the South Bronx during that time, rough era, but at the same time, also kind of the birth of street art. So you're seeing a lot of these things. You're seeing people that are now considered legends in many regards. Mm-hmm. But to a kid, I mean, it looks cool. You may think it's a passion, but knowing that you want to take this and do this with your life is a pretty unbelievable thing to acknowledge at such a young age.
It's a mixture of luck and probably ignorance. More than likely ignorance.
Two good things, though, for a lot of successful people and what they do.
You know, you never think about the money aspect. You think about where that passion is, where, you know, you want to funnel your energy into. And back then, my cousin ran with Crash and Devo and all those guys in the Bronx, and then he passed away from heroin. But those guys at his funeral were the guys that pushed me to go the gallery route.
Really?
Yeah. They were like, you know, street's cool, but, you know, can I curse?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. We'll put explicit content on this episode.
So they were like, you know, don't fuck with the street. Like, you know, because at that time in the 80s is when galleries were picking up graffiti artists left and right. And they were going to Europe, and it was this whole kind of boom for a while. So that's the direction I kind of focused on.
So at that age, when these artists are telling you, you know, don't mess with the streets, pursue this craft, go gallery, were they already seeing the potential you had as an artist, or were they just saying it to you to just keep you on track?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
A little bit of both. You know, like it you know, you got someone who inspired you, passed away from drugs. They kind of want to steer you in a different direction. And if they see that you have the same passion, it's kind of like, you know, go this way.
Yeah.
Go this way, and this will be better for you.
Who was your mentor, or mentors for that matter, or did you not have any yet at this point?
At this point, I didn't have any. I had inspirations.
Yeah, who were some of your inspirations?
I was always a big fan of Crash's work. You know, my cousin Anthony, my uncle Raymond passed away. It was probably about 5 years ago. He was young when he passed away. But he used to draw all the time. And, you know, that was, he wanted to be an artist. My mother wanted to be an artist. I used to steal paint from her.
Wow.
And she ended up going NYPD homicide. And she always wanted to do art. She had it in the house. I would steal her paints, and I would, you know, dick around with paint. So it was, my inspirations were people that didn't even know. I would see them, and they would inspire me for something, and I would kind of, it would feed me to keep going.
Wow.
You know, so.
Super interesting. And at this point, when you're doing drawings and kind of getting into it, is there a certain style that is kind of resonating with you? Is it graffiti? Is it a mixture of different art forms?
It started going into comic books.
Okay.
And then I was like, I want to do comic books. That's my jam. So I still stayed the illustration route. And my personality is, when someone tells me I can't do something, I want to know why I can't. And then I want to say, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway. So, I was doing comic books, and this is going through junior high and high school. I'm drawing. And in high school, there was a program where you can do a project, and you had to have somebody in the field review it. So I was like, I'm going to do a 30-page comic book. I'm going to write it, letter it, the whole nine yards. And this is phone book time. This is back when, you know, there were no Google searches for shit. So went in the phone book, found Walt Simonson, who did Thor, Fantastic Four. Called him up on the phone. And I was like, I'm a student in school and I'm doing this project. Super cool guy. Yeah, come on over. Let me check it out.
That's crazy.
So brought my comic book over. His wife, Louise, was a writer. And she was doing X Factor and she had started doing Superman. So went over to the house, blah, 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 and you know, he's giving me pointers on the, he's reviewing it and giving me pointers on everything. Then his wife gives me a Superman script. She's like, let me see what you can do with this. And I was like, that's badass.
It's pretty legendary.
Yeah. So I went home, and because I'm a kid, I was more excited that I got that than to actually do it, you know? So I never actually did anything with it. But I had an art teacher back in high school. And she was like, well, what you do is illustration. You're not an artist. You're an illustrator. And I was like, I'm not digging that. So I was like, fuck you. I'm going to show you, you know? And that kind of pushed me into painting. And then I had an apprenticeship at St. John the Divine in Manhattan, restoring the cathedral.
Wow.
Because I wanted to... Through my years in art, I wanted to kind of learn a little bit of everything, because I felt like if I learned a little bit of everything, it's only going to help. So learned sculpture with Greg Wyatt down there. One of my professors in college was like, why don't you talk to my friend in London, and maybe you can apprentice with him, blah blah blah. And I didn't. Because I, you know, once again, I mean, you know, first year in college, I'm going to London, I'm going to get into shenanigans, I'm going to get into bullshit. And he was like, yeah, my friend Tony, you know, well, you got to call him Sir Anthony now. Well, come to find out, it was Anthony Caro in London. And that would have been a great opportunity, but, you know, once again, I'm a kid, I don't know shit. So I kind of, you know, once again, with mentors, inspirations, everything, blah, blah, blah. And I just started carving out my path, where I'm going to go, what I'm going to do, you know? And, yeah.
So we'll jump back to the conversation or the call that you made for the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny because all you did was pick up a phone, mm-hmm, and make a call. And what's interesting is it's sometimes that simple and people just don't want to be uncomfortable. You know, how many times do you think people miss out because they're not willing just to send an email, pick up a phone, make a call, and just humanize with somebody? Is it fear of being denied? Is it fear of them getting rejected? The person may yell at them. Why do you think people aren't more inclined just to do what you did? Or, once again, is this just kind of a blessing of a little bit of ignorance and just not giving a shit?
I think ignorance, not giving a shit. And then, at the same time, you know, if you said no, it wasn't going to ruin my day. I was going to continue on. But at the same time, and knowing what I know now, if someone called me up and asked me for, you know, for my expertise on something, you know, that expertise would help them. It's funny because it's the most valuable thing we have, is that experience and expertise, but it's the least thing people seem to want to ask for. People always ask.
Interesting.
They ask for money, they ask for, you know, so many other things.
What can you do for me versus how, yeah, can I learn?
Yeah, you know.
Interesting. So, you know, you go through this, you're kind of a student of the game at this point. And it's funny, it seems like almost you became a student because people told you should stay in one lane.
Yeah.
I almost feel like if people said to you, you should do all these things, you may have stayed only in one lane, because then you would have denied them on that regard.
I wouldn't have had that fuel. I would have, you know, I would have gotten a 9-to-5 and,
yeah,
you know, been content, because I wouldn't have even known what I could have gotten into.
So when you're studying all these different art forms, sculpture, painting, illustration, at that time, was there one that kind of you liked more than the other? Did you like them all equally? Was it just different times of life, different things piqued your interest?
I did. The sculpture aspect opened up the fine art aspect for me. Because there is a difference between illustration and fine art.
Yeah.
You know, like the concept behind it, what you're trying to do, completely different things. And the, you know, it was full on like art boot camp. you know, sitting in a room, big pad, charcoal pencil, and just a drawing. And then, you know, draw this kind of, you would have like skeletons and all these things for anatomy. And he would tell you, you know, put your eye on one portion of the skeleton and, you know, study it. Put your charcoal pencil on the paper. And then he would shut off the lights. And he would go from memory, try and follow that line.
Wow.
And, you know, what it ended up doing, which helped a lot, was your eye and your hand start getting trained together. Because you don't have to constantly look at something. You can kind of, you know, feel it a little bit. And it's never going to be exact, but it definitely opens things up.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
So now you're going through and doing all these different mediums. Do you end up going to college, not going to college? Where do you go from here?
Got into Buffalo University, SUNY Buffalo. And, their claim to fame was that Sherman had gone there, and she was, you know, the museum person that, you know, graduated from there. So it was a good art school. And I remember, and I never really told the story, but, you know, you go for portfolio reviews. So I went in, and I'm showing most of my comic book stuff. So once again, these guys turn around and they're like, well, you know, this is really illustration. This isn't fine art, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, well, you know, why do you think you should be here? And once again, it was that, fuck you, you know. So I was like, because this isn't all I can do. And if I'm not here, you guys are missing out. You know, I'm super arrogant. I was a super dick. But that is what, I guess they saw that kind of drive. And they accepted me. I got in.
Really?
Yeah.
And you didn't have to do any other sort of pieces or anything in the portfolio?
No.
Wow, saw that you were hungry.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of not caring. So I was in Buffalo University, and I ended up leaving Buffalo University for a couple of reasons. My mother, you know, couldn't, she's a single mom, she couldn't afford it. Couldn't afford to pay for the tuition. And I got into a cursing match with a professor. Partly I was a kid, partly he was a dick. Like, I gotta be honest. He was super arrogant. And I was like, you know, fuck you, bro. Like, you know, once again, I'm gonna show you too. You know, so turned around and left. And then I went to college in Jersey, Ramapo. And I was, you know, working, and, you know, it was more affordable. And I actually had really amazing teachers there. The art history professor was an art critic for the New York Times. My painting professor had paintings at the Tate. Like, these are all, like, super professional people that just kind of taught at the school because it was near New York, and it was kind of like, filling in the time.
Yeah.
So that, they did a lot for me. You know, a lot kind of crafting my direction there.
So were they the first people that really started to kind of, like, harness your skills a little bit and give you kind of what you needed? So what's super interesting is, you know, you're defined in a lot of ways, right, as you're telling this journey. But I feel like graffiti was seen as the most probably defiant medium at the time because it wasn't legal. It's almost like you kind of knew where you were going, and that's maybe why it resonated with you so much, which I find super cool because it's kind of now taking you throughout life. And everybody's got their own journey and story. Mm-hmm. But you weren't meant to kind of conform to rules, it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, and even now, looking at art and everything, you know, nobody goes into a creative field, a creative endeavor, because you want to be in a box. The whole point of it is to be outside of a box. So, you know, that's kind of my thing with some, there's art going on now, and there's some artists who produce the same work, and it's been 7-8 years, same stuff. And you work so hard to get out of this box to create your own box. You know, I don't feel that growth comes from being afraid to kind of push, you know.
Do you think the money that's come into this industry has caused a lot of this?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, you know, your passion is what's, you know, if you want money, there are easier ways to make a lot more money than doing any kind of, especially doing art.
Yeah.
Art is usually it's a one-man show. You're alone a lot of the time producing work. You know, you make a lot more money doing other things. But it's, you know, there's a passion there. And that passion shows through in the work.
Yeah. Like,
you know, you do pieces and people can look at a piece and see if it's a money grab. They see if it's just dollar signs running it or if there's some drive, there's something else pushing that work and pushing the whole series of works, you know, so.
So now you have these great professors at this new college really impact you. They're embracing kind of stylistically what you're trying to do. What kind of happens next?
After that, I was lost in after school. I was lost for a little bit. I ended up, it's kind of funny. I ended up retouching pictures for an adult magazine.
Okay.
In New Jersey, some super little office in Jersey. And it was just retouching the pictures on Photoshop. Photoshop was basically, I think it was like Photoshop 2.
Okay.
Maybe. And we were still scanning slides in.
Wow.
Into a machine okay. to get the digital. So doing that, I'm still a little bit lost. I'm still kind of doing art a little bit, but not really. And then 9/11 happens. And I turn around, I start, because at that point you couldn't go into New York City to help, you know, unless you were a first responder or anything. So, but you can load up flatbeds and they would take them into the city and they would get, you know, give all the supplies. So it must have been like a couple of weeks. I never showed up to work. I was like, I need another day. And I was like, this dude's going to fire me any minute, you know, because
yeah.
I was never showing up to work. I just kept volunteering. You know, right before this, the original Moncho passed away. So I was doing this and I was like, you know, I need a reboot, you know. I'm spinning my wheels. I'm in a holding pattern. I don't feel it, you know. So got an opportunity to go to California, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna do it. Like, if it doesn't work out, I'll come back, you know. And went out to LA, and then that adventure started, you know.
And what year was this that you went out to LA?
2001.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So you get out to LA.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anybody out there?
I knew one kid from college, kind of friends, nice guy, but it's not like we knew each other in college, but it's not like we would call each other on the phone a lot. So knew him a little bit and, worked at this place and got laid off. They have massive cuts.
After you make the move to LA.
Yeah. And this is after like a year and a half.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm still starting to get heavier into art. I'm starting doing it more. Then I get involved with the LA Art Association. It's like the oldest art association in LA. Like Man Ray was a member. It was like a long time. So I get involved with them. I start having shows again. Start, you know, getting into stuff. Then have a show in Korea. And then, you know, and slowly, you know, I'm just building little by little.
So at this time when you get laid off from this position, are you looking at it as a blessing because now it's kind of forcing you to get back into your first love and really focus on the art? Was it just therapeutic? Like, what was your mindset after that happened? Because you could have easily just went back into like, well, this sucks, and you know.
Well, I kind of did a little bit. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do what I know.
Yeah, and you had nothing to lose at this point.
Nothing to lose. So I'm like, you know, I got maybe 3 months of rent to go. So I'm going to ride out these 3 months, see where it goes. So then I started freelancing some graphic design, and I was doing it for the Ronald McDonald House.
Okay.
And then I was like, all right, cool. Every job is only funding my artwork. You know, so I was like, cool, I'm getting a paycheck for this. I can keep doing my art. And I was doing that for a while. That went through. And then I ended up working for nonprofits, doing graphic design. And I had a position for a while, and it was awesome. People were great. The cause was fantastic, and everybody was great. And then they had budget cuts, and then they did a layoff. But this is already 7-8 years down the line. I'm having shows. I had my first show in Tribeca. Like, I'm still double duty.
Yeah.
Like, sleeping 5 hours a night and just, I got this during the day, this at night.
Which I love, though, because people always say, like, you know, I can't do this, or there's not enough money for me to do what I'm, and I'm like, you're a perfect example. You're doing what you need to during the day to fund your craft at night, yeah, until you get to a point where you can phase out job one to make your job two, which is your passion, become kind of what's going to fund it.
Yeah, and this is my thing. If something is your passion, if you're not willing to sacrifice for it, is it really a passion?
It's a great fucking point.
You know what I mean?
It's a great point.
Like, I wanted to do art. I'm in a small fucking one-bedroom apartment. I'm painting in the living room and sleeping in the bedroom, but I end up sleeping in the living room because I'm painting so much at night and blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, people would look at it and they would go, well, is art really paying off? And I'm like, it doesn't matter if it isn't for you, but for me, this is where I'm going with this.
You were not going to let this, yeah, deter you. You were focused.
Like, it may not look like success to some people. To me, it was success because I'm doing my passion.
So you find success as living your passion?
Yeah.
I love it. Too many people put monetary on success.
And that's the whole thing. Like, if you...
Because there's a lot of miserable... A lot of people that have a lot of money, but they're not successful in a lot of rights.
Yeah, I've met a lot of them.
Yeah.
I, you know, that's a story for another time. But I met a lot of them. And the whole thing is, like, listen, there are things that money can't buy. Like, someone else will... Oh, like, you can have... Pick a car. Pick a house, whatever. Someone will always have something bigger, faster, better. But the things you can't buy are the things you create, whatever you're passionate about that you kind of put together. Those are things you can't buy, you know, and just the experience of doing that you can't buy. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and this is another thing, and this is kind of goes into Instagram a little bit. You know, Instagram, and it's good and bad. Like, people who always love to do art put a piece up on Instagram. They're like, look, I'm an artist. And it's like, you know, you do art. But I feel like a title is earned. You know, you don't cook at home and then go, I'm a chef. Because a chef is going to go, you didn't put in the time for that. There's you have to earn that name. Because you earn that name and you respect it. So I feel, you know, there are a lot of people that do art. I don't, you know, there are not many artists.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's interesting too, whether it's a chef or an artist or a craft, they're not really so much caring of the acceptance of the outside world as much as they're caring about the peers in their space respecting what they do.
Oh yeah.
Because it's great if somebody says on Instagram, I love your work, you're amazing. But if another artist doesn't respect it, that's going to piss you off and drive you or make you want to get their kind of acceptance. And I'm not saying that you're looking for it, but I'm saying that when another artist says, that's an amazing piece, or when you look at art and people, like, they don't realize the line work that it takes to make something, to hold a steady hand, they can actually acknowledge the details that most people would not understand or not value per se.
Yeah, like on Instagram, they're artists I'm friends with. Love their work. Work is fantastic. And they'll comment like, you know, this is a great piece, blah, blah, blah. And I never tell them as much. You know, if I see them in person, I'll thank them. But, you know, with social media and everything, you never really get a chance to really get into it. So, you know, thank you. But, you know, it definitely, it means a lot, especially when you look at what they do and you're like, I'm fucking digging your work.
Yeah.
You know,
how, and that's a thing that I think that a lot of, I wish more people did in the similar crafts, is people need to show each other love more. Because there's so much hate on people's work, man, which is crazy. It's like, if you're doing something amazing, I'm doing something amazing, let's help each other just win, man.
Yeah, I mean, fucking country song time, pissing on somebody else's lawn isn't going to make yours greener.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I can, the only thing I'm critical of, extremely critical of, is the passion and the time.
Yeah.
You know, if the intention to create is only for money, and it's, there's no passion, you're chasing fame, you're chasing attention, I'm not going to respect you that much. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know?
That's fair.
But if you're, you know, there are a couple of artists out there that I fucking love them. Love them as both, because they have that passion.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you know, they don't care. They don't care about all that shit. They want to do the best work. They want to challenge themselves, produce the best work they can. And to me, at the end of the day, you know, if the same way I was inspired by pieces on the street. The same way I was inspired by works out there, if my work inspires somebody, I've paid it forward. I've done it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, get my shit in a museum. That was fucking awesome. Because now maybe somebody's going to go in, see it.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe that'll kind of spark something, you know?
No, I mean, I think that's a valid point. So you're going through these 7-8 years in LA.
Mm-hmm.
You're working, doing graphic design jobs, other things, while at the same time doing shows, exhibits, things like that. When did it start to change? When was that moment when you're like, oh shit, I think this is actually happening?
Well, I had the show in Tribeca, and that was real emotional for me, because me and my mom used to walk around Canal Street.
Wow.
And I used to tell her, I'm going to be in one of those one day. Once again, it's a kid.
You know what? There was something there. I mean, you're saying it for a reason.
You know, kids say a lot of shit. So.
Yeah, but you know what? You seem to kind of, when people told you you couldn't do it, you seemed to be making it happen. So.
You know, so that you know, that was a real thing for me. But so I get laid off from that job. And I'm sitting down, got a little severance package, got a little money. And I'm sitting down and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm balls to the wall. I'm doing art full time. And if I fall on my face, everybody does. I'll get back up. I'll go back to it. And for about 6 months, maybe 7 months, couldn't sleep. And staying up all night, like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? I don't know, my next check's coming in. Freaking out. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to live. I'm just going to, whatever frustration, fears that I had, I'm going to turn that into fuel, and I'm going to go even harder, you know? And if I have downtime, I'm going to fucking produce. I'm just going to push myself. And that's what I did.
So you just had this aha moment.
Yeah.
Super cool. It was like clear as can be.
Yeah. And I realized the harder I worked, the more I did, the more things seemed to fall into place. You know, the more I was like, I'm gonna push harder. I'm gonna go at it. I'm gonna go. And that's the only thing that was constant for me was the harder I worked, things fall into place. You know, you just have to trust in the path. You have to trust in, if you have a vision, other people aren't gonna believe in it, aren't gonna trust it. They're not you. They don't see what you see. If you believe in that vision and you're willing to put it all on the line for that, it, you know, in my opinion, like 8-9 out of 10 times, it's going to work, because no one's going to put in the work that you're going to put in. No one's going to see what you see. You know?
I think that's a great point. I mean, a lot of people are waiting for others to save them or to help put them on. And the one thing I've learned is, at the end of the day, no matter how good of intentions others have for you or want to help you, they still got to take care of their own shit first.
Yeah.
You're never going to be number one. So I think, you know, and you also said put in the work. I think people don't, they think they're putting in the work, but like you're saying, when you have 60 days to go and you're trying to figure out where the next check's coming from and you have your back against the wall, you're going to put in real work.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm going to dabble a little bit here and a dabble a little bit there. So now things start moving. You have the show in Tribeca, which, like you said, it's kind of coming full circle, which is pretty cool. How does that show perform, and what's next?
show does great. Have your shows, galleries, blah, blah, blah. Going through. And at that time, I was doing this kind of pop art series. And, you know, it's funny. I said this to somebody last night. I was like, if you're an artist, it's a good thing when people don't get your work for like a year. For a year, people are like, I don't know what to make of this. Because it means that, and it always happens. The following year, all of a sudden people, oh, shit, I get it now. I understand it. If you're creative in what you do, you're ahead of the curve. You know, and it's, people have to catch up. You know, people have to catch up to what you're doing. It's going to take a minute. And I was doing this pop art series, and I was like, you know, it's going well, but I don't feel like it's connecting. And I was like, I'm going to move on to a different series. And then I started doing series of works. I would do maybe 20 paintings. I would investigate a concept, a thing. And then once that's done, the work would start to evolve. Time to move on. You know, I got to tell a different story. I got to move. So, you know, and that's kind of helped me grow as an artist, because now I'm not just producing the same things over and over again. Like, I'll have a series and that series will evolve. It has to, you know, you can't have the same thing every day, day in and day out. Like, it has to grow. So yeah, it just kept moving from there. And, you know, I would have, you know, I'd still have shows, still have things going on. Yeah, just kept moving from there.
Nice. So you're starting to get some traction, selling pieces, mm-hmm. series are evolving. What was the first person or brand that kind of purchased or commissioned you to do something to where you're like, okay, that's pretty cool?
That's a good question. The first person that was like into the work and then gave me a solo show at Soho House was Ron Burkle, super, super nice guy, investor, blah blah blah. But he really, really believed in the work, really believed in what I was doing, and I was like, that's
pretty unbelievable, chill. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, he has. Private 757. I did push-ups on it. It was awesome. You know, like
a little bit different than the one bedroom movie.
At the end of the day, I'm still a kid from the South Bronx. You know, he had a Picasso in his library.
That's crazy.
And you know, he left me in the library, and I touched all over it because, once again, I'm a kid from the Bronx. Like, how many times am I going to have that chance? Sorry, Ron. How many times am I going to have that chance? You know, feeling up on his painting. But so after that, then comes you know, New Amsterdam and Paramount, Universal, the, you know, Google was not that long ago. You know, they start coming, and in the beginning it's like, okay, cool, like this, you know, they, you know, you feel like there's validation a little bit. But at the same time, it starts turning into, well, I want to produce work. And I want to challenge myself more than, you know, it's a benefit for them because they get the best work I can produce. But I'm really fighting with myself. I'm really trying to outdo myself. But they all, like, every client had its own kind of moment. The one that really, and this was recent, the one that really kind of hit home for me was Department of Transportation in New York. Because spending so much time away from home, away from New York, I was able to do a piece in my city, you know, get a street sign with my name on it, the whole nine yards.
Amazing.
That was a big full circle for me too. You know, it's the full circle moments are the ones that stick with me, you know.
And when all this was happening, Universal or Ron or all these big deals, is it happening so fast that you're not even really processing it because you're so focused on the work that it took a minute to then stop, take a breather, like, the transportation for New York to kind of ground yourself and go, how the hell did I get here?
Sometimes I stop and, you know, I was doing a project not that long ago and I was exhausted. I had no sleep. I was pushing. And, you know, it was one of those moments where I was like, you start talking to yourself the way you used to when you started. And you're like, how bad do you really want this? How important is it to you? And then it's like, no, it's I'm gonna fucking do this. 3 hours of sleep, it's getting done, you know? And, you know, it's, yeah, there's so many aspects of all of this that kind of come into play. And you know, it's a constant test. It's a constant test of your passion. You know, like, how passionate are you really?
How do you stay, though? You know, you've had success now in this space. How have you been able to stay grounded throughout the process and to not really be fazed by the big names or the big brands and stay true to it? Because, once again, kind of coming back to it, the industry has definitely changed over the last few years, where you're seeing the prominence of artists like The Cause of the world and a lot of these guys that are really becoming pop cultural figures in a lot of ways, and they do amazing work, but it's kind of hard not to get taken away by that. Or you know, like an Obey and a lot of these amazing street artists are brainwashed, that kind of have blown up, who have done work for years and years and now are kind of like cultural icons in this space. How do you kind of come back to the pure craft, like you said, where it's not you're producing shit just to produce it, or you're trying to keep up with demand, but you're really kind of setting your own rules, your own tone, and kind of beating to your own drum in a lot of ways. You know, what keeps you focused from not getting taken away into more of the mass production element of the art industry?
Because, I mean, and taking nothing away from those, the clients, they were all awesome.
Yeah.
I've had awesome projects, awesome clients. And this is not meant to be disrespectful. It doesn't mean shit. What means shit to me is, at the end of the day, it's you. It's a fucking, it's a canvas, it's a wall, and it's paint. And it's, what are you going to do? How are you going to make this work? How are you going to make this piece? How are you going to put life into that piece? At the end of the day, that's what it is. Like, you know, it's awesome clients and it's awesome, everything is, it's great. I'm not taking anything away from that. At the end of the day, it's you, a canvas, and you putting yourself, you know, like pushing yourself and getting what's up here out there.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting. I almost think that the mindset of a graffiti artist who started in that craft think that way versus other types of artists, and I could be making an assumption here, but even I remember reading a piece recently on Cause in GQ, and I think Obey was quoted and a few different people, but it was just like you said, he's got a million things going on, but it's right back to the canvas.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't really care about the attention. He's getting a lot because his work is just becoming very big. Even he commented on the Simpsons piece, like, I can't even believe people are paying this, and it makes him feel uncomfortable. But graffiti artists, true by nature, they've evolved into other, you know, types of forms of art, always kind of come back to the basic principle that you just said, is back to the studio, back to the canvas.
Yeah.
Like, and it's never been about money. Like, you can quit at any point and just say, hey, I'm getting a check, let's go. But I think it's when you're in graffiti or you're a true artist, like you're saying, it's something you don't want to do, you have to do it.
Yeah. There's you can't even describe it. There's a drive to do it. And I mean, you know, I'm the worst at self-promotion. Like, you know, if people ask me, I'll tell them things I've done. Yeah, I'm in the permanent collection at Soho House with Damien Hirst and all these people. I'm in the Davenport Museum of Art. They're hanging it next to Warhol and Liechtenstein and that wing. And those are all massive accomplishments. But at the end of the day, I'm excited to get back in the studio. I'm excited, what's the next painting? What's the next series? What am I working on again? And, you know, I probably should be better at self-promotion. I'm not.
No, but you know what? I think the thing is like you said, people will eventually, if it's good work, it's good work. And I almost compare it to music, right? If you're a true artist, if you make good music, you're always going to be successful in the craft. You have a lot of these people that are making shit music right now, you know, stuff for radio, let's say, just to get a quick single, mm-hmm. but there's no longevity. Yeah. But if you look at every genre of music, hip hop, Jay-Z, Nas, still relevant. If you look at, you know, pop, rock, and people like that, anybody that's doing Springsteen, any of these folks, they are still relevant. They're still moving numbers, because if you put out real content, real emotion, and in the same way, produce real paintings, real art, real sculptures, people are going to get it. They may not get it right away, but eventually it's going to catch on.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought it was interesting how you said, like, you have to give it a year. If people recognize it right away, it's almost like when Banksy became super popular, everybody started stenciling shit on walls.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that became the thing for that year. But the people that were doing something different may not have resonated. You know, like, I look at some of my favorite artists, like Keith Haring and people like that. 80s, that's his whole lane. Now you look and people are starting to revisit these type of looks and feels, right? So it's like, how do you create your own identity in a space that has a lot of noise around you? How do you not pull from other artists? Or should you? Like, how do you look at that? How do you create your own ideas? And this is more for, too, not just you. I want to know, so if artists are listening or kids that are inspiring, how can they figure out their lane versus replicating somebody or trying to imitate somebody?
See, and that it's, and especially with art, that's a weird thing, and you know, it happens a lot. Like you'll see pieces that,
especially on Instagram. Oh, I'm like, that looks just like that person. I'm like, how do you know which one is which?
And the sad thing is, when it looks like a Haring, when it looks like a Lichtenstein, and once again, I did a pop art series, but it was beat up and weathered, to, you know. But when it looks so close, and basically, you know, I've seen some artists do the same shit, exactly the same. They'll just, you know, maybe they'll throw a fashion logo in it. They'll do something else, you know. It's the equivalent of, you know, putting a wig on a pig. It's all the bells and whistles you can, everything. Look, it's got this, it's got this. It looks expensive because it looks like a Haring. It looks like a Basquiat. It looks like this. So it has that, it looks expensive. But it's a fucking designer imposter. Like, it's already been done. Now, if it's inspired by it and you take it further in a direction, that's different. That's a different story. And I was actually talking to this one artist friend of mine, Mike, today. And I was he was telling me, like, somebody had copied he does these time-lapse videos. And, oh, somebody's copying. And I'm like, listen, this is part of the game. People are going to copy what you do. The difference is when you're inspired by something and you start building, you're building to a direction. If somebody steals it, they can't build it to a direction. They stolen a moment in time, and it's all the time before they got you to that moment. They don't have that.
Yeah.
They just have that snippet of time.
So don't even get held up on that shit, because it's only taking away from your craft at that point.
It's not going to go anywhere. I've seen people steal a bunch of shit for, like, stuff I've done. They'll steal it, blah, blah, blah. And at first, you know, you get pissed. You get annoyed. Like, oh, how dare you? Whatever, you know, be original. At the end of the day, like I said, it took me 40 years to get to this point. You're taking 1 year out of that. But you don't have the other 39 that got me there. And that other 39 is what will continue to evolve the progress. So you're taking a moment in time, and you're going to try and turn that moment in time into something. That's like if you watch The Godfather and you take 30 minutes of the movie. That 30 minutes means nothing without the beginning and the end.
Correct. You got a whole series. I mean? Yeah.
So, you know, you can try and steal, and that's great. Hey, make some money. Make some money, be a one-hit wonder, do you, my friend. But at the end of the day, like, you're going to be back in the studio, staring at a canvas, and, you know, back to the same battle.
So now that you've kind of been in the space for a while, you know, where do you see the industry going? Where do you see kind of the art movement? Is it going to be on fire as much as it is right now? Are you going to see different types of trends? Kind of what do you see?
It's, you know, I think it's growing pains right now. I think, you know, artists and collectors and even galleries to an extent are all trying to understand the social media monster, all of that stuff. They're trying to make sense of it. There's way more interconnectivity globally than there used to be ever before. You know, I remember when I started out, it was still slides of paintings on a slide sheet. You'd send that to the gallery would get the slides, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden it turned into emails, and all of a sudden that, and now it's social media. Technology's moving really fast, and I think we're all still trying to catch up and understand what it means to what we do, you know. I think growing pains a little bit.
Yeah. So with that being said, you know, what's next for you? What do you have shows coming up? Is there a new series? Kind of where can people find the latest and greatest on what you're going to have going on?
For right now, I had a couple projects. I got to do a mural out in Scottsdale, and I'm doing the Saatchi Fair in Brooklyn in November. At some point I gotta make a visit to the museum. That's it. Just getting back in the studio.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of murals, and I'd like to have some studio time.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you're in Atlanta right now doing a mural, so.
Yeah. Well, you know. But I gotta come back to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I gotta come back in 2 weeks for the unveiling.
And then for those that may not know, where did you just do a mural at that you're going to do the unveiling for?
It's at the Moxie.
Okay, cool.
In Midtown.
So if people don't know, super cool hotel brand.
It's really, like, you know, I dig it.
Yeah.
It was a cool atmosphere, cool place. And the fact that, as an artist, you love when someone understands what you do and they're like, just do you.
Yeah.
And when they give you that kind of creative freedom, just do you do, blah, 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 they're going to get the best piece possible because you're fighting with yourself once again. You're trying to outdo yourself, you know?
Yeah. And, so, you know, it's crazy. When you got into this game, did you ever think there'd be a time in life when brands, corporate brands for that matter, were going to become so accepting of street art?
No. No. Not at all. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see brands actually embracing the arts as much as past 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, before then it was, you'd have like little pops here and there, you know, like the fashion brands always embrace the arts, and BMW always had their art car. There was always certain little things. But to see brands embracing visual arts as much as they are, because there's a lot of it. It's actually super cool.
Nice. Well, I want to thank you for coming on today. I need to shout out our man O.
Orlando.
Who connected us. And if you go to LA, you need to go to O Gallery. O's got the dopest stuff. Amazing human being. And always connecting good people. So I appreciate him for that. For those that want to just kind of follow what's going on, catch you on social, website, all the selfless promotion that you love to do, you know, let people know kind of where they can find it.
Moncho 1929. That's the Instagram handle, and moncho1929.com. It's the website.
Nice, man.
O, can't say enough good about him. O is a fantastic guy.
He's a good dude, man. Yeah. So, you know, the one thing I want to do before we kind of wrap up, if there's one thing you can leave with somebody today, one piece of knowledge, kind of game that they can kind of take away from to be successful or to do what they want to do, what would you say to that person listening?
Everyone has a different metric. So everyone telling you no and everyone telling you can't do it, their metric of what can be done is totally different than yours. So you can't base your potential and your vision on somebody else's limitations or somebody else's viewpoint. you know. So, you know, believe in what you're doing. If you passionate, you believe in it, it's gonna move for you. It's gonna go.
Love it, man. Well, appreciate you coming through all the way from LA, West Coast. Man,
thank you for having
Definitely,
me.
Definitely, man. Continued success.
Thank you, man.
Once again, I'm your host, Justin Epstein, and thank you for listening to Culturation. As always, this show has been powered by Premiere.